that it does have, Islam is, you know, it's, as far as religions go, on a scale of 1 to 10, Islam is probably a 7 or 8. That's pretty high up there, right? So with its next stretches, Christianity is only like a 4 or 5, right, maybe a 6, but Islam, somewhere, they got us, there's many flaws, but, you know, they're not bad, not, they do believe in one God, really one God, and they do also accept parts of Torah as being true. They distort it, but they do accept parts of it. So it could be that the length of the neck is emphasized because it does stretch up, so to speak, higher than does Christianity. It has a significant advantage. And he says, and if that's the case, so where its head is resting is a parts on a half. That means the symbolism of a half is that, yes, but it's not completely there. In other words, that head, which is ultimately the root of Islam, it's not completely there. You know, the Pope earlier this year, last year, criticized Islam. Anybody remember that? No, he said much more than that. He had a very, very profound criticism of Islam, which applies to certain Jews as well, which is that that Muslims believe that there is no intrinsic good or bad, but only what Allah wants them to do, what Allah doesn't want them to do. So there's no way to extrapolate from the sense which human being has of, let's say, dignity and morality and ethics, anything, because that's meaningless. All that's meaningful is the word of God.
Isn't the way to find is what Hashem wants us to do?
I told you some Jews think that way.
Well, how do you think that way?
I mean,
tell me where I'm wrong. I want to understand. But
what?
Who else defines good or bad? What Hashem wants us to do?
Ooh, you guys, come on. When was the Torah given? Yeah, how long was the world in existence before the Torah was given?
1620
Whatever, this cycle. 2400 years or so, right? Abraham, did he have the Torah? No. He did what was good and avoided what was bad.
Because he had the Torah. What did he say? I remember he wrote the whole Torah.
What do you
mean?
People say
I'm
from the
Torah. He said he was Mekayem the entire Torah because he knew that this was a good thing to do.
Yeah.
It's not that he got the Torah.
He
didn't receive the principles either. He intuited from his knowledge of good and bad, that which is moral, that which is immoral, what should be done and what shouldn't be done.
So what defines moral and immoral?
The way God created the world. The Gemara says it's not for the fact that we had Torah, we would have learned tznius from a cat and diligence from an ant. And there's one more which are missing.
Well, you know, tznius is good. That's why I said it's
good. No! No! They are good because they are good. God made good. Not because God said it's good. That if the Torah wasn't given, the Bria itself indicates what is good and what is bad.
Was good. He invented the concept.
What is the good Gemara saying? If the Torah wasn't given, then we would learn good from a cat. If the Torah wasn't given.
Okay, but still some hope.
For the time being, forget the Torah, just say that there's good and bad. Who defines the concept of good and bad? Hashem defines the concept of good and bad. So they hold there's no difference between good and bad except what the Sharia, their law tells them to do.
Uh-huh.
And therefore there's no such, you know, if you want to be Mahana in the midst of killing people, so you become a suicide bomber, right? There's no ethics or morality in Islam which militates against that. That killing people is a bad thing. No, killing people is a very big mitzvah. We struggle, right? We all struggle with the Amalek issue, right? When it comes to resolution, there are terusim, right? But why do we struggle with the Amalek issue?
Because
we know it's wrong, right? So to speak.
Well, because you know it's wrong? Because it's wrong to go kill Amalek?
No, it's right to, but the question is why? Did you ever ask that question?
Me, that's my question.
So if that's your question, that means you have an implicit sense I'm sorry, an intrinsic sense of right and wrong, this affronts your sense of right, correct?
This affronts your sense of the halakha. I would say, I think Jews in the middle. I think Christians are completely on the side.
What am I supposed to do with you?
Jews are in the middle, but the Muslims are in the middle. The Christians are completely on the side. We got the law, just the sense of God.
Right.
Jews are in the middle.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, we have a lot of love. That's what God says, isn't it?
Right, but we're not like the Muslims.
Okay.
I don't see, and since that's me, I don't know enough about Islam to know if there is any branch of Islam. I think there might be the Sufi mystics, although I don't know enough about them. You know?
No.
I think there are not. They might have some branch which is into good midos, but most of Islam is they have rotten midos, and they're not into good midos.
Well, there is there.
So I think that a function of that religion is that midos are not an important part. And I guess, you know, I'm like saying this when I'm being recorded, but a true brisker who doesn't believe in Mussar, you know, maybe there's an equation there. Yeah.
The Talmud, there's a few views or says a few things on Yishka. Are there a few things on Muhammad?
No, because it's too early.
Muhammad was 1,300
years ago. Yeah. It's the end of the Talmud precedes Muhammad by 175 years or so, something like that.
Well, besides their fanatic views, could we say that what they're doing as far as the way they keep, I know, certain areas of Saudi Arabia as far as you know, no, I don't know how specific, but like they don't keep, you know, poor can't touch there, no pornography, no immodesty can touch their land.
The U.S. Army loves that.
Can we say like that's how, you know,
it's yeah, but it's all, we perceive it as all being all hypocritical, because they're not supposed to have pornography, but they all have multiple wives, right? And in the house, they have, they can do whatever they want, and they don't eat pork, but it doesn't seem like they have any specific rationale for it. It's just unclean. I don't know exactly. Well, I guess that's her rationale too. Take that, strike that. But I don't know. Eating pork is a good, interesting thing. I don't know why they don't eat pork. That was, if I was a guy, why not? So I don't know. I think that's one thing, you know. But what Muhammad did is he picked and chose. He plucked some things from here, some things from there. So not eating pork sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, but it's like the strictness that they keep is like, should we respect that? Like, maybe that's the way Israel should be? You know, no pork should touch here, no other religions should come into
it. You should respect it, but you shouldn't imitate it.
Wasn't that like to a degree the way Israel, you know, the way the Orthodox?
That's what my father always said to me. He said, you Haredi Jews, if you guys took over Israel, it looked like Iran. So, it's not just my Haredi.
We can still benefit from pork high.
Pigskin. Yeah. But the Maisa, no, it wouldn't look like that. A Jewish land would not look like that. There are many reasons for that. But one of the major reasons is that we are the religion which brought you loopholes. Right? We have Pesach, we have Mechirat Chametz, right? Mm-hmm. We have women have cover hair, we have shekels. We have prohibition on interest, we have Heter Iska. Right? We have Shemitah, we have Prusbul. So we regard our law as being something we have to maintain, but only just. And really what our primary intent is to me, is to acquire wisdom, knowledge, and be good people. That's what the real intent focus is. So we won't admire necessarily people who find the law to be the be-all and end-all. Now, in all fairness, one could say, well, what about the briskers? Right? What about the strict flip-flops? Right? So they, even though they don't admit it, they also believe that there are other values besides the strict fulfillment of halacha. It's just that they're intellectual values. There was the concept of being a profound Talmudic scholar. I don't think that exists in other religions. Mm-hmm. You know, this so single-minded focus and all its manifestations. That's their, I think, their value.
That's why you can tell me what she said. There is no morality, there's only law. I actually kind of like that a little bit. You say morality comes, the judge is a sentiment. Even if God gave man a certain kind of rahmanas, how do you refine it? These are mitzvahs and things. Same for the Jew, we have these things, but we have to refine it in touch with the mitzvahs of, you know, all the halakha.
You know what his excuse is? Because part of Allah is Vasita Yasha Rasov. He's a straight and good thing. And part of Allah is Vishni Mishra Sabin.
So those are laws, that's why. Right?
Right, so then we all come out in the same place, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, everything is fine and dandy. Yeah, then becomes semantics.
The problem I have with Islam is that they're not allowed to drink alcohol.
Yeah, but they're allowed to smoke hashish and opium, that's not a problem.
It's a real kicker. We're not allowed to do that.
What?
We're not allowed to smoke hashish and opium.
So,
well,
off the penis.
In moderate amounts, you'd be allowed to. It wouldn't harm your health. It would not be illegal. Right? It is illegal, but otherwise it would be okay.
Now, we said that they're like Ishmaelites and some of them are Amalek, but like...
No, we don't know Amalek is.
Right, so I mean, how do we know? People say this and that. I mean, some of them call themselves Ishmaelites, because as far as I know why they're Ishmaelites. Like, do we know through...
They call themselves Ishmaelites.
Right, so as far as we know, do we know because they say they're Ishmaelites?
No, but they identify, in other words, we call them Ishmael because they call themselves Ishmael. Of course, they're not all Ishmaelites. Some of them are from Indonesia.
Right.
Right, they're not native Arabs, right?
Right.
But it's all considered to be the Ishmaelite religion because it's all based on the premise that God chose Ishmael and not Yitzchak. Yeah.
To be the founder of like Islam?
What? The precursor of Islam. Yeah.
Is there like a Torah source for that?
No, there's a Quran source for that.
I don't know.
Yeah,
but
they saw
Ishmael. Right, but I mean...
God made a covenant with Ishmael.
But that's their source versus our source.
Right, but they think their sources are right.
We just think our sources are right.
True. Now, so where does that leave us?
Who are they?
What?
Who are they?
What do you mean, who are they?
They call themselves Ishmaelites. As long as it comes out, they say, I'm an Ishmaelite. No, you're not. Prove it.
What, if somebody converts to Judaism, are they a Jew?
Yes.
They call themselves to be the children of Abraham?
Yes.
Same thing. If somebody converts to Islam, he becomes one of the children of Ishmael.
Why Ishmael? Why didn't he be Noah?
It could be, but Muhammad threw a dart at the board and he hit Ishmael. He could have been, you know, he could have hit anybody, but that's the one he hit. You know, can you imagine if tomorrow you were able to make up a religion, what's your name again?
Chaim.
It would be phenomenal, right? If you were enough of a demagogue, enough of a charismatic individual, you could disseminate Chaimism like wildfire. And you can make up your own rituals, do any, meeny, miny, mo. You can make people fast for 30 days a year if you want, you know, like, or not. It depends on what you want to do. So he picked and chose. Picked and chose. And obviously he hit a successful formula. Yeah.
So what the descendants who are now practice Islam, these people before Muhammad, what did they do? Who were they? What
they're
did they
pagan.
They're pagan.
Yeah.
You can't help but notice the similarities between Islam and Yiddish faith.
Of course. It would just be much more similar.
Yeah.
Muhammad had a falling out with the Jews. He thought the Jews would come over to him.
Uh-huh.
He had a falling out with them. He changed Islam.
I heard
originally
that.
They had a Yom Kippur. I think you know, maybe even around our Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
But they got rid of that because it's too Jewish. So say you have to fast 30... What? They had to daven a lot. They're very prone. But they had... instead they have to fast 30 days. I can't... That religion is beyond me. How somebody can fast 30 days straight?
Wow. You do the day, but not during the night.
Still. Especially when Ramadan comes out in the middle of the summer. And they're machmir and halacha, no drinking.
So the food do
but they have to go to school, they have to do stuff. They have to, it's 30 days, you can't just sleep for 30 days, right? In the Middle East, maybe.
Water.
I don't think they can drink water.
Well,
Oh, yeah? I didn't forget it.
Do you think a parading political party came to power right now in Israel and would create law with secular
laws
like that?
It couldn't.
No, it wouldn't be. They wouldn't be able to run the country.
Well, they wouldn't be able to.
No.
I mean, they could have a wife, though.
Right.
But there's no Sanhedrin. How could he?
I don't understand. You have the same. What's the question, though?
The question is, if there were to be a religious government in Israel, what would stop the religious children from imposing religious law and become over a secular population, a popular secular population, that wouldn't make...
They do that now.
Like I read.
They do it now. Because coalition agreements.
You have like the status quo agreement, I understand,
yeah.
What I'm saying. But an embracing type of law that doesn't have the agreement.
Listen, a Haredi government is only going to come to power when a majority of the state of Israel vote for Haredim. If they're voting for the Haredim, they're that crazy. Then they must have been willing to accept what was bad with
the
country.
60% of the country is votes for the Haredim, and 40% of the country does.
So the Haredim will make accommodations. Obviously, they're real, they're pragmatists. The thing is, right now, they don't have to, because they know there's no chance they're going to be elected to the government.
That's actually the question I was really focused on. Do you think there would be accommodations made in compromise made to incorporate...
Until Mashiach comes, yeah. What else do you have? What else can you do?
You'd be like Saudi Arabia.
That's not our ideal society.
It's more
democracy.
Yeah.
So
you bought it off, but sorry, it's more
Judaism was never like that. It doesn't impose. It says, okay, look, these are the rules. Play by them, or you're not
just
going to be in the game.
There are ideal Jewish societies which exist. Sometimes we don't have them.
Yeah, Brooklyn.
If you look, let's say at pre-war Europe, right? And you can look at various different communities. You can look at Frankfurt. You can look at Vilna. You can look, for that matter, at Morocco. At Fez. You know. There were communities which existed and functioned in a holistic and wholesome manner as Orthodox communities. It's happened in the past. Munsee is very much like what an ideal Jewish community would look like. Right? From our perspective.
I don't know.
No?
I mean, there seems to be... People seem very upset in Munsee.
Upset with what?
Yeah, the other day,
everybody
else. Sitting in traffic, and the guy comes up and just pulls right up, and you just start talking the horn like crazy.
Oh, you're talking about something else. I thought about Bezos, not about
government,
not about lifestyle.
No.
Oh, so you just switch gears on me. That's not fair. You just switch gears on me all of a sudden.
So, what are you talking? You're talking about.
I'm talking about how what the society would look like.
Well, is it just the way
government works? No, it's the way people live. You know, you said it would be Saudi Arabia. No, it would be more like Muncie.
My personal experience, in like let's say Borough Park. I mean, all right, you know, there are laws. From a driving perspective, there are laws. And I see kids, Hasidish, you know, and they're like, you know, some of them just drive like they've never taken a driver's ed class in their life.
Probably
haven't. And they're thinking, well, I'm going to pay tshuva and the Abishas on my side, so it's okay. But you know, it's also a matter of, you know, just having decency for the other person who's driving along with. You know, so I mean, it's just. That, you know, you don't have to play like strictly by the secular rules, but sometimes they're there for, you know, just so you can.
Have you ever noticed that Hasidim smoke more than other people?
Yes, definitely.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
All these things are correlated. If you're not the less educated you are, the more likely you are to be a smoker, and the more likely you are to be a reckless driver. So basically, rednecks in Hasidic clothing. Not all Hasidim are like that. Wait, that's clear. We're not talking about all Hasidim. You know, but these guys, the ones you're referring to, that's what they are.
Are they at least studying Torah?
No!
Not even doing that. They're just walking
around.
So what's...
Talking around their cell phones,
What are they doing then? Why do they do that then? Why do they even dress Hasidic if they're not even studying Torah?
Because it's become a social grouping as opposed to, or a societal grouping, as opposed to indication of advanced Avodah Hashem.
So, how does somebody...
If you're born to a Hasidic family, you're going to leave? That's your milieu.
But I mean, don't they at least instill loving the Torah then?
No, you can't do that to everybody. So it's a massive. They're massive movements now. They're not small bands of kooky Ovdei Hashem like they once were, or like Noah would like them to be today. Manhattan,
right?
So the they are to, it's these are massive social groupings. Satmar, I mean, has hundreds of thousands of Hasidim.
So, and you're saying that not all of them are legitimate?
It depends how you define Hasidus. You guys all assume, like I assumed once upon a time when I was a little kid, that every Hasid is a rabbi. This was a shock to me when I found out for the first time that not every Hasid was a rabbi. I remember when it was. It was in Meir Shearim when I was going to buy my tzitzit for my bar mitzvah. We went into a Hasidic store, which was recommended to us, and I asked the guy a question. The small Hasidic yid behind the counter said, "Ani lo rab, ani lo yodeh." He's not a rabbi. He's confessed. No. I said, "Wow, that's a shock. How can you not be a rabbi?" But that's not. It's not. It's the Hasidic dress is not an indication in many cases of anything more than a societal demarcation. Does that bother you? Why? You're a closed-minded person. Right. That's their identity. They are that. Would you go? What's your name?
Ellie.
Ellie, where are you from?
The Bronx.
Bronx, which wears a Yankees cap?
Sure.
Oh, same thing. Wasn't she wearing Yankees cap and they're wearing a strumpet? That's true, Chicago's more expensive. That you're identifying with the Yankees, the Bronx Bombers, right? They're identifying with the Rebbe, right? The Satmar Bombers.
I mean, but hang on. On one extreme, it's an extreme to expect every grown Hasidic man to be a rav. And on the other hand, it's an extreme to say that.
So now I'm asking
that there's a chisser in their.
So now I'm asking you to adjust your attitudes.
Okay.
Just like not every Yankees fan is an angel, right? There's some corrupt Yankee fan. So too, not every chassid is an angel.
Fine.
Okay.
I'm happy with
that. Right, so that means that, but they wear the garb because they want to be affiliated with this movement.
Right.
Who wants to be the only person in the neighborhood that doesn't have a beard?
Yeah. You know what happens here in Muncie with the Detroit?
Yes.
It's the same,
But that was a chassid.
That wasn't?
No.
What was it?
It was not it.
It
was
a red
light in the
park. But it was he who dressed the whole park. No? I heard the story wrong then.
Yes, you did.
Sorry.
It was a guy who was a neighbor of ours, lived on Crestview. You know where Crestview is? Two blocks down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And he was Mistake. He davened first in one Mitzvah Shul, and then at the end he was a Baal Kore in Rabbi Zimmerman Shul. Oh, he was Rabbi Schlitzer at one point. He used to come here, they say, learn in Or Samech every morning, early in the morning at 5 o'clock, learn that, and we even said that.
Yom
HaShoah
Zimmerman.
It was a big marker.
Yeah.
So when he was totally Mitzvah.
He has kids? Yes.
Well, he has kids.
Yeah.
He had a wife who divorced him.
Yeah, that's
what
that's the
way
I understood the
story.
Did he regret?
Yeah.
What was wrong with him?
Yeah, I'm sorry. What was wrong with him? Selling
trade chicken.
Yeah, weren't you here with the trade chicken last year?
Oh, you talking about that on that time.
Yeah. So
how did they catch him?
They caught him because his chickens weren't salty enough.
Well, his suppliers had stopped putting chicken in the he showed up at the big meeting with chickens. You want to bet your reputation on how this tastes? He said that his supplier said we stopped talking to him months ago or an hour long ago and broke into his kitchen.
That's the whole story. Well, how they then verified that he was actually.
I heard it was at a wedding. The guy used to buy from Boston. Why don't you buy from me more? He's going to buy from this other guy. And he goes, so yeah, the other guy. He goes to the other guy. He says, you buy from me? He doesn't buy from me.
Yeah, but it's because the original story is that the owner of Hatzlacha's brother-in-law or something like that worked for Ala Processing, which is the Satmar meat concern, and somehow he found out that he wasn't actually buying meat from there anymore, which he was supposed to be buying, and that seems to be the supplier. So that's how I think about it. That's what I do. Yeah. Yeah.
A weird question, but do you suppose that guy ever fed fake food to his own family? Probably not.
Probably not. Right.
Just the rest of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he? So you left the country?
I heard that he from my rod, he has yeshivas in Cologne. He said that he went to Israel and they were like hitting him in the street.
Oh yeah. Israel's a good, cool place. It's very hard to do tshuva or something like that. He sent a letter to the entire Muslim community last year before Yom Kippur, asking forgiveness.
Well, I think he spent the rest of his life doing that.
Yeah, so, I mean, what does it mean to send a letter? So, it's hard to do tshuva or something like
that. My brother said Gehenna won't be enough for him.
Okay, I don't know if that we have to go that far. No, we hope that he does some sort of tshuva.
He managed the Muslim community probably killed him.
Yeah, we just beat them up. Okay. So the, any more questions on Islam before we go? Yes.
I wonder, this idea was like, you say, oh, you know, Israel went to like Iran. You know, the idea that when Mashiach, you know, the idea that if you didn't keep Shabbos, somebody would kill you is still foreign and difficult to me. But, I mean, when Mashiach comes and we reinstate that Sanhedrin, we're going to have a different consciousness. For instance, you know, let's say people now, I don't know how some people vote, let's say the American government, Russian government decided, like, we're going to start saying that all Jews have to keep Shabbos. I just feel that somebody would go, yes, that sounds good, I'm going for it. I'm terrified by the idea. Not only that everybody has to keep Shabbos when they're ready, but that you should also do it indirectly through the non-Jewish government to try to...
They wouldn't, the Haredim wouldn't do that.
But imagine Israel, you know, trying to send Hedron, it's like...
It's not
but the guy got to come about Shuba, I got to go, hey, you don't have to stay in Russia, you don't keep Shabbos.
It's
like
very no, but it's very hard to kill somebody, right? And then in order for me to be able to kill you, I have to come up with you and say, listen, this is forbidden to do on Shabbos in front of two witnesses. This is forbidden to do on Shabbos. If you continue doing this, you're going to have to be put to death in a court of law, and you have to say, I'm doing it not with the intent that I should get killed in a court of law. That's a pretty high standard to uphold, right? You have to be insane to say that, right? Or if you go like this to the guy, and you continue being machal they can't put you to death.
But they can excommunicate him.
They can do all sorts of things, but he's worried about the people being executed.
Right.
Yeah.
But then Shabbos is a very other thing.
The only thing which is easy to get executed for is murder. Murder and proselytizing for idolatry.
That's proper murder too.
What?
Was he the same Hasra for murder as well?
Yes, but you're supposed to be, since murder is such a heinous thing, so therefore you're supposed to, if you know somebody murdered, you have to get rid of him somehow. Chazal had ways of killing people indirectly.
For example?
The Malchus, there are all sorts of things.
Beat him like that?
No, they just put him into, they used to starve him to death, basically. But also there's sanction, the government is encouraged, since we have two systems of laws in Judaism, the religious and the civil. So the civil government is encouraged to set lower standards for murderers. I mean, lower standards of testimony. Because we don't want that.
So did they kill people for not observing Shabbos, or did what you described it? It was more like, you know, yes, in front of two witnesses, you have to tell them.
No, it's like I described it. They might, but they killed them. I'm sure they killed a few people, but very few.
And those are the ones who actually said, I did this.
Yes. Yeah.
In terms of halacha, so, for example, I believe there's any idol worship in the land of Israel, you should smash it all.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so...
There's another complaint my father had against me. When the Taliban started knocking down the big Buddhas in Afghanistan... Does anybody remember that?
Yeah.
So my father said to me, ha!
About a year
ago. You guys... Yeah, so that was a long time ago, actually.
Well, 6 months before 9/11.
Yeah, is that what it was?
It was your father
or father-in-law? My father. My father was probably the same way, but my father's a real yekka, a real German Jew. He believes that you can learn Torah, but you have to go out and get a job. You know, there's no... This rabbi stuff, he doesn't hold to that. Now, it's okay, we get along very well, I'm exaggerating. Anyway, but So he said, you guys would have knocked down the Buddhas too, right? Culture, schmulture, you would have knocked down the Buddhas. So again, I said, no, we're the religion which brought you loopholes. All you have to do is get a non-Jew to knock off a finger or a nose or an ear from one of the Buddhas. And we're just fine, Dandy. We'll just leave it there.
If it was in the land of Israel, it would not
what?
If it was in the...
That's all you have to do.
Wait.
The Goy is Mevatel of Hazara.
How can we... If we're supposed to remove Avodah Zarah from the world, or at least from Eretz itself, I mean, so I have no obligation whatsoever to like go to one of those Avodah Zarah stores, like the ones that sell Buddhas, and just firebomb it?
First of all, no. Don't do it. Secondly, I'm talking about one which isn't worshipped anymore. Of course, it is a stumbling block to people. Right, why did Afghans destroy the Buddhists? There are no Buddhists anymore in Afghanistan. They just don't want them around, right? So we can make them into museums. If we see if they were Jewish, they would put them in glass cases and sell admissions. That's what they would do.
But we can antagonize the idol worshiper. If they're in Israel trying to convert other Yids, like Joseph James, we can antagonize them. We're allowed to, give them a hard time, basically. Or no?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're actually supposed to, because they're not supposed to be taking Jewish souls away from us.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, the topic is Islam. Now, one of the two things that Muslims say that the religion is that it's the will of God, other than the supposedly reading the Quran and Arabic, right? The second one is that their very quick ascension into ruling so much of the world was one of the reasons why they're right. But that's actually, I mean, they would have won all those battles if God hadn't, they're right in the sense that they would have won those battles anyway if God hadn't willed them to do so. But God wanted, obviously wanted people in the area to have been converted, yeah?
Yeah. Islam is a positive step in world history. Just that things didn't progress past that. But that was the initial step, was a progressive step. Yeah. Yeah.
This is a part two to my question before that.
How to found religion.
So like Islam halakhically itself is okay in the land of Israel.
It's not okay for Jews, but it's okay for Muslims to be Muslims in the land of Israel, yeah.
Why is it okay for Jews?
You couldn't convert to be a Muslim.
No.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay, but yeah, you can leave. Islam is far less problematic than Christianity in that respect.
Right.
Yeah. Okay? Onwards. Now I have another sheet. This one's a photocopied darker.
Is this the Gemara? What paper is this?
This is the Ein Yaakov. It's the Gemara. Marana Yaakov Bar Shlomo Ibn Chaviv. By the way, I just sent an article today. Do you know what Samach Tet actually stands for?
What?
Samach Tet. After a Friday name, very often you see the letter Samach Tet. Have you ever noticed that? Spartan usually explain themselves. Yaakov Kuli, Samach Tet. Some people hold it means Spartan Tahor. But it doesn't. It actually is an acronym for the word say feitas, may his end be good. So actually you can write it about yourself, because that's how people find it, because they're saying may my end be a good end. That's because you ever see Yaakov's signature Samach Tet, that's what actually it means. But the common misconception that means Friday Torah.
If
you
guys know
that,
they say
that's not kind of a problem. What? Yeah. So here it is written by Yaakov Bar Shlomo Ibn Chaviv, and the commentaries, of course, are from various different sources. So V'amar Rabba Bar Bachana, V'vidi Chazli Yahu Akrokta. What kind of animal do you think an Akrokta is?
Like a
Crocodile.
No. Close.
Alligator.
Frog. Okay. Croak.
Oh,
right.
You said that. I read something about that. With
the that was the big frog, right. Yeah.
The big frog in Egypt?
Well, one of the Midrashim says that the way the maka of the frog, or the frog works, the plague of the frog, that there was one big frog, and whenever they hit it, hundreds of blocks of little frogs came out. Okay? Look, once it's a miracle, it's a miracle. I'm not sure. There's no difference to make anyway. Anyway, so other avokados, the didi chazi ahua croaked up, I saw this frog, the avoki akroda grunya, was as big as the city of Hagrunya. Vako Zagrunya Kamahavi, and how big was Zagrunya? Shitin Bote, 60 houses. Asatin Yona, then another frog came, Bola, and swallowed the first frog. Then Asa Pushkatsna, a raven came, Ubola Tanina, oh, I made a mistake, sorry, Asatnina doesn't mean another one. Asatnina means there came a snake, a serpent, tanin. Asatnina by a bala, which came and swallowed the frog. Asapushkanta, a raven came and ubala the tanina. And it swallowed the snake. The soul got to be alone. And then the raven went and sat on a bird, on a tree. Chazachate, come see. Kama nafi shchela dilana. How strong the tree is. Amra Papa Bashmuel, Rapa Bashmuel said, Ilad avoy hasam, if not for the fact that I was there, lo hemne, I would not have believed it. I think you should be able to figure out what the metaphor here is yourself.
Can we
say that? A huge frog. 60 houses were big, right? And a snake came and swallowed the frog. And then a raven came and swallowed the snake. And then the raven sat in the tree, and look how powerful strong the tree is, that the tree supports this huge fat raven.
Tree is a
farm.
Good.
And the
raven is
a
Jewish people.
No. Frog. We won't use raven, because it's not
kosher
bird.
No.
So you have a frog, which is straight. You have a raven, which is straight. You have a Nachash, which is definitely
super trade, right?
Super
trade.
The
next,
the Nachash is a Yitzhahara. Something
you see in the horror, then. You could do that. But it's easier to do it with the previous mushroom. Assuming it works as the previous one with, what famous song does this remind you of? Agadia, right? So Agadia, each nation destroys the other one, right? And so that's what each nation comes and destroys the nation previous to it.
Egypt destroys the frog.
Well, he says interesting, that's what I would say too, but he says the frog is, and I would say it's not the Islamic religion. Nobody says it's the Arab people.
The frog?
Yeah.
Arab people?
The frog is the Arab people, yeah. And they rule over the Jews. At the time of Ritva, they ruled over Israel. After their other... Several other nations got mixed in with them. So he's really actually that the raven is the Arabs, which includes other nations which they conquered, which are the snake and the frog. So it could be the frog stock is Egypt. And they conquered Egypt.
Why does Islam rest on the Torah?
It's not Islam, it's the Arabs.
He says
it's the wonders of Hashem that the Jews can live with them and sustain their Torah amongst them. And if not for the fact that we saw this, we wouldn't believe it. In other words, if they are oppress us, right? So that oppression is like this heavy weight on the tree. But the tree still stands firm despite the burden it has to carry. So that is how Chaisol, Mekayim Torah, fulfills the Torah, even when
the bird finds support.
What?
The bird finds support because it's living on Eretz Yisrael.
Well, I don't know if it's Eretz Yisrael, I'm a Jew.
Is it a support there?
Well, we know that nations which kicked out their Jews just, then suffered a great downturn of future. The Jews in a country actually helped sustain that country. And then the nation turns against them, so then they lose.
Interesting.
Spain is the best example.
Spanish Armada.
See, Spain since they banished the Jews, it's been a second-rate power. It really has not, never a third-rate power, a fourth-rate power. It's never really a...
Egypt, Babylon, the Romans, everything.
Yeah.
So what's making Germany so powerful?
Germany has the second largest community of Jews today in Europe, after Great Britain.
So, Great Britain has the largest community, or
Great Britain in Europe?
Really?
Yeah.
In New York, we have pretty big.
In Europe.
Yeah, most likely in Russia, because lots of Russians in Asia. So, in Europe proper, it's the second largest Jewish community.
That's order of the power. It's basically Britain, then Germany, then France.
In Germany? What's the city? Berlin?
They're all over. Jews are all over.
You're saying just the German Jewish population?
Yeah.
Where are they from?
Mostly not. But the shuls usually are from. But it's an interesting European thing. It's kind of like the Sephardim. But the Sephardim, they might be Mechallel Shabbos, but they go to a Orthodox shul. And Europe is still like that to a certain extent, even among the Ashkenazim. So even if they themselves are not practicing, they'll go to an Orthodox shul when they need to go to shul.
So even to this day, Spain, in a sense, has a banishment on Jews?
No, they lifted it sometime, I think, in the early 1900s.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, before that, since the last person killed from the Spanish Inquisition was killed in 1815, and that was in Mexico. In Spain itself, it was like in the early 1700s. So, but officially the ban was not rescinded until the 20th century.
So, about the subject of Jews that leave the country, does that mean that they've raised all the spots of holiness that could have been raised up?
See, I would say yes, but there was this fellow, Menashe Bar Yisrael, who was the one who convinced Cromwell to readmit the Jews to England after they had been banished several hundred years previous.
1290?
What's
that? About banishment in 1290?
Yes. So in the 1650s, whatever it was, the Cromwell came to power, they allowed the Jews back. And Menashe Bar Yisrael, Ben Yisrael, was a great Kabbalist who lived in Amsterdam. And he believed that Jews have to be dispersed over the entire world before Mashiach comes. So it seems from what he said, from the fact he wanted the Jews to go back to England, that he held that before Mashiach comes, they have to be in a state of dispersion across the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
I'm talking about a country like Saudi Arabia. There's no Jews.
There's no Jews to be raised.
There's just nothing left.
No.
Spiritual desert.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would assume so. Unless we find someday that people actually, go back there for some reason, but it's unlikely.
I've heard of people in Yemen that live in mountains.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia.
There are Jews in Saudi Arabia
that
don't know they're Jewish.
No, but Jewish community. But
don't they reject? Isn't the Saudi Arabia, maybe it's Israeli passports they don't allow in Saudi Arabia?
They don't allow passports which have Israel stamp in them.
Israel stamp in them.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean Jews.
No, I mean, if a Jew has a U.S. passport, they wouldn't have a hard time getting to Saudi Arabia.
Well,
in theory, not even Christians are allowed to live in Saudi Arabia. They're only because they came up with some special dispensation to make money, so they allow Christians in Saudi Arabia. But in theory, they should only allow Muslims.
Wow.
That's the strict letter of the law. So it's interesting that Rav Papa Bar Shmuel, at the end of the story, says, if not for the fact that I was there. So the way the Ritva explains it, it means that he perceived the same thing in Israel's state in exile, that they were able to sustain themselves despite all the oppression. But as we mentioned when we began this discussion a few weeks ago, it could be all these things are metaphors. And that they took place, well, not just metaphor, it could be how I meditate, could be all these things were meditations and visions. And therefore, what Rabbi Bar Shmuel is saying, I had the same vision. I was able to see this also, that this was the fate of the Jewish people, that they'd be able to be oppressed, but they'd be able to bear and sustain the oppression successfully. So either he saw it intellectually, or he saw it experientially, or he saw it meditatively.
I mean, the symbols,
any of the three.
The symbols have to they're valid.
Those three installations would all be valid.
I mean, the regular nice thing is, how do you identify these symbols? Are they cultural? Are they archetypal?
There probably isn't a specific reason, I just don't know. And I haven't figured out why a frog, why a raven.
Do you think it would be a continued Masorah or something? The rabbis would know, we see this in other occurrences. They see the random different animals, the different mushrooms, different animals. I mean, it can't just be arbitrary.
No, you have to know from Tanakh, though. Like, what is an orate? You know, you'd have to go back, for example, for the orate. If you wanted to do it right, you'd come and for the raven, you'd have to go back and see what goes the raven and Bracious. Understand the raven and Bracious. And understand that the two generals who were Gidon killed, the judge, because they rebelled against him, were orate and Zave. Raven and Fox. And then you have to go, there's lots of things, wolf. So lots of things you have to take into account. But, it's not concealed, it's just that we haven't spent the time to reveal it.
Because I saw all the things in Bereishis, the tree, the snake, and the raven, and then the frog. The frog may represent the multiplicity of the world or something. And you get the horror, and you get the doctor.
That's not bad.
I just know what the frog is. The frog is, little things come to the big thing. What's the big thing? Either Gan Eden or multiplicity or birth or something. And then you get the horror. And then what is the raven Bereishis? The Israelites are using something.
Well, you could also say, just if you want to be creative, so what you do is you say, a crocta. Why is it called a crocta? Because it croaks, right? Maybe that is to in contradistinction to us, who use our voice for Torah and Tfila, say croak. So even their Tfilos are not meaningful Tfilos. I'm not sure there is chat, and I might not want to say that. I'm just showing you how you can brainstorm, and I got it to like this, and it's totally familiar. You can come up with whatever you want. That's the elasticity of that God says intentional. They're giving you a place to understand. They found a metaphor which can hold multiple truths.
You can't do that with a puzzle, can
you? Of course it was a puzzle.
Okay. So that's the beauty of not just the God says.
Yeah, but in Pesukim, it's not usually a parable. It's distorting the chat and the words to fit your end. So that is inherently a distortion. It might be a valid way of distorting things, but it's a distortion. In this type of thing, you're not distorting anything. You're taking the muscle and applying it. Okay? I think that's part of it. I just didn't realize this until just now when I started saying this. But I think that this probably is true. That Chazal designed the Agadata to be elastic. That it should be a mashal which can represent many things. And that many people during the course of history would come and explain the mashal in a different way. That's part of the reason, perhaps, why it was written this way and not as straight out. Well, here surely they couldn't write it straight out because this is prophetic. So about the Ishmaelites and the Arabs in the future. But they couldn't write it straight out because it really straight out that's one shot. But if you write it like this, then it can have many
children. This is the Rambam when he speaks about Gadata. There's these objective secrets in that only certain people know, and the idiots, you're not supposed to get it. Don't take your liberties with it.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Those objective secrets, there might be more than one secret per Gadata.
The Kabbalah speaks this up? They use it as a Gadata or no?
Not this kind, because this kind is very much, they don't use a storytelling Gadata. They use a theological Gadata. Sometimes they use, but rarely, because it's much harder to make it Kabbalistic. Now, of course, Rav Nachman had his famous stories, right, which had Kabbalistic intent. But, and they would do, you could do it with this, but it's not as easy to do as on a Gadata, which has to do with, just expounding Pesukim.
What's the raven? Because I got it, and I just have the raven. What's the raven supposed to represent?
It represents cruelty.
Doesn't help it? No, there's one frog that's around and Gan Eden, there's multiplicity that comes out, but they're consumed by the Yetzirah outside of Gan Eden. Something consumes the Yetzirah, which eventually has to live or find solace or rest upon Torah again.
No, it's not bad.
I just know the Raven of the system. There's a good book called The Juggler and the King.
Yeah, it's on the Sukumar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It goes through a lot more detail. It goes through the animals.
Yeah.
To explain it.
Okay, you have homework. You know, The Juggler and the King, see what it says there. I'm sure, yeah, look, there are many commentaries on this, and we're not going through them, but I'm sure that you might be, you can find, yeah, he brings down the cruelty thing, in one of the other commentaries here.
The Rebbe could be dead also, no?
Yeah, because it's black.
So what tames the Yetzirah, which is the Nachash, it's dim, which eventually comes back to...
Okay, that sounds good. Alright, so I think we'll leave the next one for after. So there's interesting, one point I wanted to make before we stop is that a lot of these Mishalim say use the non-Jews as the metaphor for them is fish. As the Gemara, I forget where it is, somebody, Cotton maybe, who says the best time to eat a fish is just before it goes rotten. It's kind of like aged steak. You know, aged steak is basically meat which you control the rotting process, and then you grill it and what?
Cheese.
Right.
Red apple.
It could be that this metaphor for fish for the non-Jews also has something to do with the fact that when the non-Jews are in this non-Jewish nation of whatever sort is rotted, that's when the Jews are able to, well, that's when they'll be able to overcome. Otherwise, they won't be able to. What Gemara says in Brachas, that you can't defeat somebody when he is in an hour of great success, even if he's a Russian. And Reb Tzadok explains, because at that point, in Shamayim, his din is that of a tzadok. Right? It's because it's not a real tzaddik, but they're treating him like a tzaddik for whatever reason. So therefore you can't mess with him. Only when you see he begins his downfall, then you can have the, you can try and overcome it. Yeah.
So when Hitler crumbled, can we actually trace a decline in the Third Reich's success?
The Stalingrad. They said two turning points, World War II, El Alamein, and Stalingrad.
But that happened so suddenly.
It didn't happen suddenly. It took a long time. Each one of those took a long time.
How?
Stalingrad took months and months.
Took
months. And El Alamein was the result of the whole, you know, the whole North Africa battle, which also stretched on for months and years. So it was a very slow process. Okay, but you know, theory one would say, I don't know if you would say it about the second world, it's so hard to say the same practice. And theory one would say that if what they should have done in the early years was negotiate with him. You know, in the 30s, by the time we reached the 40s, it's too late. So maybe had they tried to negotiate with him, bribe him, whatever, maybe that would have been able to fend off Warren. And Chamberlain had that idea. Just that too little too late. So maybe earlier would have worked. Because certainly that's the idea. Don't oppose Russia, because this is not, obviously it's not the right time to go and oppose him. Wait till there are indications of the downfall.
How about Iran?
What?
How about Iran?
Iran is a second-rate power. I don't know exactly why, but, you know,
they talk
some,
bigger, though.
What?
And they talk a lot bigger.
Yeah, they're big talkers.
They're coming from New York.
What?
They're coming from New York to speak.
Oh, the UN? Yeah, that's
not the first time.
Oh. And like every rule, the exception to the rule. So sometimes you have to stand up and do something. Okay, next time. Is Mark and Tima Toiva?
Yes, the
question.
Yeah. From Chaplain in Iraq. Yep. Been in the army 2 weeks and it's under Iraq.